Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top-brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus, and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. My name is Jack Luke. I'm Bike Radar's deputy editor. And today I'm joined by Simon Van Bromley, Bike Radar's senior technical writer, and Warren Roster, Bike Radar and Cycling Plus's senior road technical editor. And today we're going to be talking about SRAM's new red group set, teased for months and months and months, widely seen on the world tour. Spiden Patents is finally here after some wait. Warren's been testing the group set extensively before launch, and he's the man with all the scoop. We also have Simon to give a sideways grilling on our favorite subject, new group sets. Anyway, we're going to start things with sort of the key talking points of the group sets. There's lots of different changes. We won't go over them at the beginning of the podcast. We'll let Warren do all the heavy lifting for this one. But the biggest change, and the one that we kind of spotted early on, or Simon certainly spotted quite a while ago, actually, it was on a canyon bike. It was on a training camp.
Yeah,
is that right?
The training camp picture. It was almost a couple of Christmases ago.
Long time ago. Yeah. A Christmas miracle. Anyway, the biggest change is that the ergonomics of the hoods has been significantly changed. Warren, what's the score here?
Yeah. New lever ergonomics. They've retained and improved the reaching contact point adjustment. But the main thing is they've remodeled the hood shape. Now, on every generation of hydraulic SRAM, the piston contained within the hood has been vertical. And therefore, you've ended up with that big, like, pommel shape.
Almost like a Easter Island head, always thought.
Yeah. Which, obviously, you know, aesthetically didn't look brilliant. Although, talking to a few guys that I've been out riding with recently, and the cross racers and their more sort of gravel-focused ones actually quite liked it because they like the grip. They like that extended grip. And, you know, I was showing them, like, new red, and they were going, oh, I don't know if that's going to be. Mm. But, I mean, I do, you know, it looks brilliant. It looks perfect. And because the simple fact is they've just turned the piston. Horizontally, which has extended the length of the hood by about 7 millimeters.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like a lot, but in the context of a hood, it does really make a big... Like, I remember when Dura-Ace changed, or going from the rim to the disc brake version, that, like, small increase in size has a big impact on how a lever feels.
Yeah, but they've also slimmed it as well. So it just works better, I think, for a wider range of hands, because the old one did feel, you know... I didn't really have a problem. I've got, you know, big shovel-sized hands, so... I never really had a problem with it, but I can understand how it would be. And especially now with that extended reach adjustment, it's going to work a lot better for a wider range of people.
So yes, that's one thing you mentioned. We've got a new reach and brake contact point adjustment. Is that a new feature for this group set?
It's had reach adjustment before, and it's had a semi-contact point adjustment. Mm-hmm. But this new contact point adjustment is basically a four position, and it does have quite a big effect on the feel of the brakes, which is, in my opinion, the biggest single improvement that they've done on the new group.
Any thoughts on the lever ergonomics or even just the aesthetics, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the first thing we all thought when we saw the kind of leaked images was it looks a lot like Shimano GRX Di2 shifters, which, you know, universally very well loved for their ergonomics. I think, you know, Warren's point about the kind of extended reach is, you know, really important. And, you know, as you say, that's almost a stem size. I think at this pro level, you know, bikes are getting longer and longer. And I think this new lever shape really plays into that kind of trend of riders having their brakes kind of tilted in slightly. It's going to work a bit better with that because, like, you know, I think, like Warren, my hands are actually opposite to Warren's, relatively small, but I didn't mind the old ones. I didn't think they looked amazing, but I thought actually, you know, you didn't really hold that pommel. The bit where you held was
great.
Was,
word, by the way, pommel. That's very, very
was absolutely fine. But I do think this new lever shape is going to play better, and it is interesting that SRAM, or and the kind of component brand they own, Zip, is releasing new handlebars and components at the same time. And I think that, yeah, with this trend of, you know, the trend from kind of like Pogacar, Remco Evenepoel, like to tilt your brake levers in, obviously the UCI clamped down on that a little bit, but we're still going to see riders doing that. And I think that kind of like lower height to the hood makes it so that when you tilt them in, you can really put your hands right on the top of that and kind of like brace your forearms on the handlebar to get that kind of aero position that we see is so popular in the pro peloton.
Of course, Simon and Warren's wonderful, colourful descriptions are very evocative, but there's only so much words can do. So, of course, head to bikegrader.com to see pictures of the new group set and read all of our thoughts, review the whole shebang over on bikegrader.com. There are links to all that in the podcast description. Next, other key thing, wow, a roll back the clocks. We've got a claim about something being the lightest in the market. I love it. That's a real return to form for bike marketing. The new group set is claimed to be 154 grams lighter than the previous generation of Red, making it the lightest electronic group set on the market, according to SRAM. Any thoughts on that, Woz?
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, they made a big play when they were presenting it to me of like every element of the group set is lighter. Mm-hmm. So, apart from the carryovers, which would be the battery. Mm-hmm. You know, even things like, well, the cassette's lighter. How much lighter? It's a gram lighter.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when you do a sort of comparison between it and its biggest rival, Durace, I mean, I think the difference in weight is, I think we, you know, in the comparable groups that we had, I think it was 37 grams.
It's nothing, is
it? You know, it's not even a Snickers.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, who cares? You
know? Yeah.
It's light, just, you know.
Yeah.
It's a pro-level grip set. It's going to be light.
Simon, I have a feeling you're going to echo these thoughts.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting that, say, with the brake calipers, for example, you know, obviously they've kind of got that skeleton treatment. Now, I think it looks awesome. Don't get me wrong. But I do question whether it would have been faster to have had an aero brake caliper, for example. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's because of where it's located and whether it doesn't make a difference, and therefore you might as well have it lighter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a question that occurs to me. I think, you know, all else being equal, lighter is obviously better. It's not a huge amount, but it does make a cool headline marketing claim. You know, the interesting thing is, so it's a claimed weight of 2496 grams for a complete group set. But, you know, that's still far heavier than the lightest ever SRAM Red group set, which was SRAM Red 22, which I can't remember when that launched, but that was 1741 grams. Mm. So, you know, it's a weird one to think that we kind of like, had we got past the whole weight weenie thing. But then, at the same time, what else is there to do?
Yeah. This group set is like, it's not massively mad. There are some really cool tech. I don't want to do a disservice to it. It's a cool group set. There's lots of interesting stuff to talk about. But it is like, to the nth degree now, we're kind of optimizing things. We've definitely reached a bit of a ceiling with road bike group set performance. Things can always be improved, but like, this isn't going to be a night and day performance, I imagine, difference rather between the new and the old. But we'll find out from Warren in a moment. On that, just very briefly, you've mentioned Durace. You know, Super Record Wireless isn't really part of the conversation from Camping Rural now, but off the top of your heads to grill you, any ideas of how this compares in terms of weight?
To compare to Super Record Wireless? No, not off the top. Come back to me in 2 minutes, Jack.
We'll come back to it. So that could be a nice callback in a few minutes in the podcast. Next on the topic, similar ergonomic change. We now have a new bonus button, which provides ANT Plus device control or auxiliary shift options. Is this similar to the button on the top of the pommel, to use our new favourite word, on DI2 hoods, kind of at the top?
Yeah, it's effectively the same, but it's on the side.
On the side.
So if you've got any sort of experience of GRX DI2, that's where they put it on GRX DI2.
And what have you used it for when you've been playing with the group?
Initially, I've set it up to operate the front mech, which is really cool, because obviously the SRAM shift logic is you press both levers together. And I thought, actually, reaching down from the hoods and doing it is fine, but you still have that kind of thought process, oh, I've got to press both together. So I wonder what it would like just having one button to front shift. And it was brilliant.
And interesting.
Again, last week I was out riding on a gravel ride down in the Purbex, and one of the guys I was riding with is ex-Cannondale, and he used to do all their demo days and things like that. And when I was telling him about it, he said, oh, that's brilliant. He said, because quite often on demos, a lot of the people that come along, he said there's a particular rider in the local areas to come along to all the demos, and he had limited mobility in one hand. So obviously pressing two buttons together, he couldn't do it. So it ruled out him ever owning SRAM. And he said, that's brilliant. That's a really good idea, you know.
Interesting, yeah.
Which is something I'd never considered, but actually it's quite a good thing.
Salute big savings this Memorial Day with Blinds.com. upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. And Blinds.com makes it easy. Choose premium blinds, shutters, and outdoor shades. Just in time for summer fun. Get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. All backed by Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Memorial Day sale now for up to 50% off. Plus premium door busters. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I think the adaptive nature of electronic groups, that's something we kind of overlook quite frequently. We're looking at it very much from a sort of performance perspective, but they are more flexible in the things that you are able to do. So in addition to shifting, what else could you do with that magic button?
Well, and since the new hammerhead turned up, which arrived a little bit later than the group set, I've actually set up the right-hand button on my red axis to flick between screens, a bit like you can do with the i2 hidden buttons with the Garmin. Basically doing the same thing as that. So I've got one button doing my front shifting, one button doing flicking between screens, which is very cool. But the way that the new red axis integrates with the new hammerhead, you can literally assign all those buttons on the fly from the screen, on your GPS basically. So I have sort of been out riding and gone, what would happen if I made one of those buttons shift the rear, one of those buttons shift the front, and just, play around with it. Or even I've assigned one of the shifters to turn on my rear light radar.
I always liked that with the Garmin stuff. I always quite fancied the idea of being able to control lights from the cockpit. An unbelievable indulgence, but a fun one nonetheless.
Yeah. But it does mean you can, you can just, I mean, I even tried it to operate the wireless dropper on my gravel bike from my road bike, and that worked in my garage. That's the problem if you've got more than, this is like proper first world problem. If you've got more than one access bike and you're setting up a new access bike, it just comes up, you go, right, where's my rear mech? Oh, there's four of them. Which one is it?
Oh, my heart bleeds for you, Warren. My heart bleeds.
Oh, mine. No, that includes test bikes as well. But,
Simon, any thoughts on what you would like to use these buttons for? Do they tickle your pickle or are you not too fussed?
So I have only recently actually connected my DI2 to my Garmin. So I think, again, first of all, I have the same problem with Warren and Axis, but except with power meters. When I'm trying to connect a new power meter to my Garmin, it's kind of like to look up the ANT numbers to make cross-reference and make sure I'm recording from the right one. So I also have a load of Garmins to do the same thing, but I did recently connect it. And I think at the moment, I just used them to just flick left and right between the pages because that is quite useful.
Because
it's been raining so damn much.
Yeah.
The touch screens on Garmins get very slippery and they don't always work very well. So flicking between that has been a kind of nice convenience. But I don't know, to be honest. I think, Warren's idea of using it to actuate a shift is definitely an interesting one. So I guess at the moment, electronic drivetrains, they don't have actually that many functions if you think about it. But there are, as you say, to be controlling lights or controlling computers, there's way more that you could do with it in theory. A wireless integrated shifter, the DI2, you've got three buttons per shifter. In theory, you could have a lot more and you could do a lot more things, but, just get a little keyboard on your handlebars and then we can have command prompts.
Let's hear from you. If you've done any kind of interesting hacks with your DI2 or AXS setups, we'd love to hear from you. We did a really cool article years ago where a guy had mashed up PlayStation shifters into his AXS. It was so funny.
I wonder if anyone's ever got Doom running on DI2.
But send us through any cool photos. Maybe we can write an article about it. It's the sort of thing we absolutely love. Next, onto the front derailleur says we've got a new cage design and auto trim function. My key question, Warren, is it faster and is it as fast as Shimano? As that's always been a bit of a Achilles heel of SRAM, we could fairly say.
Yes, simply. I've always sort of maintained that I think the thought process of SRAM's shift logic, where you're pressing both buttons together, is what makes you think it's slower. But I think the actual mechanical movement, I don't think there's very much in it. If there is, it's fractions of a second. But I think it's that thought of pressing, right, I've got to press both buttons together now. And so actually doing, my experiment of just allocating the front shift to one button, you suddenly go, oh, it is. But I think this new design, because the cage is a little bit longer, it's slightly thinner, so it actually pushes the chain earlier. And the yaw action in it does have that auto trim function. So what I have noticed is you can be the worst cross-chainer in the world and you won't get the front mech to rub, at either ends, at both ends of the scale. And I do think that on previous generation axis of all types, there's an occasional hesitancy for when the chain actually moves up, especially going from the small ring to the big ring. You could occasionally get this sort of almost like eighth of a turn of the crank where you're just thinking, oh, has that engaged properly? And that's gone. It just it snaps up and it snaps back down.
It's quite an interesting, I suppose it'll be because SRAM uses smaller chainrings. It's actually quite a stubby cage and quite deep. It almost looks like last generation 2x mountain bike front derailleurs, whereas compared to Durace, which is a bit longer and thinner.
I think it's because basically SRAM, the difference in the jump in teeth between the inner and the outer ring with SRAM's latest Axis chainrings is a lot smaller. So you go from, so you have 50-37 rather than 50-34. And so there's a 3-tooth difference. You know, that's kind of like a good or bad thing, depending on how you look at it, right? You know, tightly spaced chainrings are like a tightly spaced cassette. You know, the difference in cadence between one and the other is smaller with tighter chainrings. But then, of course, you get less range. Mm. Now, SRAM makes up for that lower range by having the 10-tooth cog out back. And then, you know, so 10 to 36 gives you all that range then with tighter chainrings. But, you know, Shimano might offer a 50-34 and an 11 to 36 tooth cassette. But then you're losing out on the kind of top end. But I think that's the difference in the kind of why the cages are different. You know, and I think I haven't used this latest one. And I do think Shimano had a small advantage in terms of front shifting compared to the previous generation. I do think it's one of the things that people tend to be very dramatic about, where it's like, Shimano front shifting is so much better. And I really, whenever I'm testing a SRAM bike, like it's always absolutely great. Like, you know, really, really good. But then, you know, like so is mechanical front shifting. Like Shimano 105 front shifting is also excellent. Generally, front shifting is just really fantastic now. As Warren says, like if you measured it, it's probably fractions of seconds. Shimano DI2 front shifting just seems to act with such ferocity. You know, like it really like jams the chain straight over. And I think, you know, SRAM front shifting, as Warren says, it like previously, it seemed to just kind of like go a little bit more gently, you know, so it kind of massaged the chain over a little bit. So it's like, as you say, it's kind of happening within a single turn of the pedals, you know, pedaling at 90 RPM, that's really, really fast. But yeah, like I said, I think the kind of the main difference at the front now is really that chainring ratio thing.
Interesting. We're going to come on to that now. Actually, no, we're going to have the recall back. Mm. Simon, how does new SRAM Red compare to Super Record Wireless?
So it is obviously claimed to be lighter. Super Record Wireless is 2,518 grams, which is basically exactly the same as the last SRAM Red Axis. So you kind of expect, you know, this kind of claimed weight is going to be 30, 50 grams lighter.
Okay, so there's basically nothing in it between the three. Pick your fighter based on your preference as much as anything else. Or read the wonderful reviews on bikecredo.com to decide which is the best for you. Anyway, on to chainring and cassette options. There's quite a lot to go through here. What I want to know is how it compares, but we'll go through the chainring options. So for 2x, we now have 46-33, 48-35, 50-37, 52-39, 54-41, and 56-43 for the pros out there. And alongside that, we have 42, 44, 46, 48, and 50-tooth 1x chainring options. And then four cassette options to go with that. Warren, how does this compare to the old one? What are the big changes here?
There's a lot more. They've brought in those pro-level sizes, and it's sort of quite difficult to work out through SRAM's pre-information because it was almost like I had documents that contradicted each other. And so there was a lot of to and fro with SRAM going, what? Because basically the 4633, the 4835, and the 5037, that's what you'll find on OEM bikes. So that's basically the same. But now they've introduced the 5239, the 5441, and the 5643. And that's basically, you know, that's almost like pro issue.
They had to do, I recall when last Red came out, they didn't have a pro level chainring option. Then the pros wanted it. And then they were sort of forced eventually to release this pro only version because UCI regulations. So it's interesting to see that they have just gone straight out like, no, look, here you go. Yeah, you can have it from the off. And I'm sure this is what we'll see all the pros riding in Simon von Bromley because it's moderately more efficient.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, these weren't available at launch last time, but these sizes were available aftermarket. And actually, like, you know, if you're a pro, SRAM rather cheekily seems to make 60-tooth 1x chain rings for a lot of the pros that they, you know, they don't say where they get them from, but they seem to have the same tooth profiles and the same, you know, back of the chain rings. But like, you know, maybe the pros are getting them from another supplier. Who knows? But yeah, as you say, UCI rules dictate that anything the pros use must be commercially available.
How big is 1x a talking point? How big a talking point is 1x, I should say, for this new group set, Warren?
The 1x that we've seen so far is all basically aero options. You know, so it's an aero chainring option. They're not yet talking about 1x for everything else. I think that's because imminently we'll see a new Explore version of Red.
Okay, interesting. And actually on 1x, just because you mentioned aero, one notable thing we'll come on to is that this is backwards compatible with other 12-speed Axis stuff. Any talk about time trial things here, just thinking for 1x options?
Yeah, I mean, those aero rings are, you know, and the aero chain sets. But I mean, I think that's one of the things that SRAM have been pretty canny about because they've been 12-speed since 2019. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to jump in and go, oh, I need the complete new red access group set.
You so can, shifters, for example, if you had a time trial bike, you could go backwards if you're desperately wanting
to. You can mix and match from, you know, and at any level. So
I think this is one area where SRAM does hold like a massive advantage over Shimano. Mm. Shimano hasn't really updated, they kind of really simplified their time trial offering with the move to 12 speed. And so technically now, if you're on 12 speed, you have to run, if you run the little bar end clicks on time trial extension, you have to run synchro shift with those. Yeah, because you know they only have one button each.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know if there's a 12 speed junction box that would enable you to then like, because they're wired as well, there's no wireless TT shifters. You think you'd have to run those with a junction box, and then maybe you have some sprint shifters as well, which you could then assign to do a front shift. But it can cause a real problem. Like, so there was a time trial Worlds 1 or 2 years ago where Ethan Hayter dropped his chain. He had to stop and get off the bike because he couldn't force
Race
the mech.
Over. Yeah.
He couldn't force the mech to do a front shift. And it's a really weird thing that, like, you know, maybe just Shimano thinks they don't sell enough, but SRAM's wireless system allows them to release, you know, the blip sprint shifters, and they can just be used for anything. You know, you can get adapters to put them on the end of your tri-bars, or you can just put them on your bar tape or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. The SRAM Access app just lets you set them up wherever you want. No junction box, nice and neat and tidy. And yeah, Shimano just has completely ignored this stuff. Like, they haven't updated their 12-speed offering, really, basically, for time trials. I don't know why.
And SRAM has sort of gone overkill on that wireless blip thing, because you can put like up to six on one bike.
One under the saddle, just for a laugh, yeah.
So your mates can operate your dropper post to you.
One really interesting talking point with this, I think this deserves, well, we have its own story on bikerader.com, but aftermarket group sets, so group sets not with complete bikes, will ship with the latest Hammerhead Crew computer. So SRAM bought Hammerhead a few years ago, has been sort of pumping some cash into the brand, has released a few new updates and so on. But this is a new computer altogether, and very unusual to package it with the group set. What's the score here, Woz?
I can see the point of it. And now we've got this third generation Hammerhead Karoo. You're not allowed to call it Karoo 3, I've been told that.
Okay.
Or you're not allowed to call it V3 or anything. It's just the Karoo. But it's the third generation on.
So that's what Wahoo tried to tell us. They're like, it's not the Wahoo Kicker V6. It's just the Wahoo Kicker. I'm like, nah, it isn't though, because that's not SEO optimized.
it's the Karoo V3, yeah.
And they have kind of brought it very much into the SRAM family. Like you get the new Karoo, you turn it on, you go find it. It literally will find the group set, and it will say, oh, there's a whole group set here. Do you want to set it up? You go, yes, please. And then you just put in your chainring size, you put in your cassette, does everything else for you. And then it goes, do you want to play around allocating buttons, etc.? It's just very, very smart, very clever. I mean, and I've been using it quite a lot now. And I'm almost at that tipping point where it's like, do I turn off my Garmin forever and just keep using this? Because it's smart and it's very, very clever. It's just the fact that I've got decades of Garmin data that I don't really want to give up. So at the minute, I'm riding with a Hammerhead on my bars and my Garmin in my pocket.
Mm-hmm. It means you're doing twice the miles, Warren. So, you know what I mean? That's the most important thing. Yeah. In terms of like the as its function as a GPS rather than its integration with SRAM, how do you think it compares to, say, a Garmin or a Wahoo?
It's very good. I mean, it is very, very good. It's got some really nice new functionality. I mean, the one thing I've been playing around with and really think is brilliant, because every other GPS in the market, even the, you know, even the very best Garmins, setting up navigation if you're not using a GPX file that you've uploaded
is
dreadful.
It is really dreadful. I'm just back off of a tour for 2 weeks, and like we had a planned route for the most part, but on a handful of days we were like, oh, actually we're a bit knackered, let's just kind of like make a real quick ride down to where we're heading.
Yeah.
And like, it's rubbish. The sort of doing it by the pins and trying to like make a manual route is just so bad on a Garmin still. It's kind of shocking, really. Yeah,
when we're all used to Apple Maps and Google Maps.
That is the beauty of the new Karoo, is that you can use Google Maps, you use Apple Maps, and you literally drop a pin where you want to go and then share it. And you share that pin via the Hammerhead Companion app on your phone, and it automatically, without being prompted, sends it straight to your head unit. And then head unit goes, you want a route there? And you go, yes, please. And it just does it. And then you can set whether that's an off-road route or an on-road route. And I've been playing around with it to, you know, commuting to the office yesterday and today, and I've done two different routes just with the, you know, with the immediate things, just by dropping a pin. And it, and, you know, the route it took me on yesterday is a, you know, I've been commuting to this office for quite a few years, and it took me a route I've never been before, and it was actually really nice.
What a treat! Wonderful.
I mean, I had a lot of climbs, which is probably why I haven't done it before, but.
We have obviously got a full story on this computer. There's lots more to talk about than we want to here in the podcast. So do head over to that. I'm sure there'll be a review of that computer to follow as well.
I mean, there was the rumours that they were sort of mooting on the presentation as well, that there might be some bike brands which are including the Hammerhead on their SRAM Red level bikes. Because it is an OE option should the brands want it.
Interesting. Yeah, that'd be quite an unusual move. I can't really recall any other time where a computer has been bundled in this manner. Like, I know Shimano many, many, many years ago had like flight deck stuff that would come with an integrated computer. But that, I mean, we're talking like 20 plus years ago, probably. Interesting.
Yeah, they threatened to do things like that. You know, like they brought Pioneer.
Yes.
And then obviously Pioneer made the power meters, and then Pioneer had their own like kind of head units as well. And I thought, oh, well, maybe that's going to influence, and, you know, then Shimano will start making head. Because, you know, Shimano's always had a history of kind of integration with Garmin, for example.
Yeah.
But Shimano is a big enough company that you would think they would just decide to be like, oh, we'll just do this ourselves and we'll sell computers, you know, but they haven't done it. So maybe it's something they're working on, of course. We don't know. We did see a Shimano patent recently for a potential 13-speed drivetrain.
Oh, another plug for you, Simon.
So head to bikeradar.com if you missed that last week. But, you know, who knows what's going to come.
I mean, I think on the, the other thing on the Hammerhead being integrated into the group, I almost think there's got to be some sort of politics there, because obviously Garmin do seem to have a very close relationship with Shimano. Obviously, the DI2 setup on a Garmin is really easy, you know, it's well integrated. It's pretty vanilla when you're trying to do that with SRAM. And obviously Wahoo as well. I almost think like SRAM and the Hammerhead coming together, I think, was probably a reaction to almost being left out by the big GPS brands that are out there. You know, so I think it's probably a fairly canny business decision. But I also think there's a bit of politics at play there as well.
I do think SRAM's really good at doing that, though. I think, you know, when SRAM's kind of like seems to like want something to do something that they don't do, they often just acquire someone who does it really well. You know, if you look at their power meters, for example, when SRAM wanted to make a power meter, they just acquired Quark.
Who make
fantastic power meters. Now, you know, the new power meter on this one hasn't really changed, but it's, you know, it didn't really need to change.
Is it still integrated with the chainrings?
It is still integrated with the chainrings. That is the one thing I would have changed. But, you know, just as a power meter in terms of like how it functions, super reliable, bomb-proof, you know, like actually like relatively reasonably priced compared to, you know, an SRM or Campagnolo's latest power meter spider. You know, there are things it can't do. It can't do like accurate left-right split because it's, you know, it's measuring total power. It's not, you know, it's and then estimating the split. But like in reality, most people don't need that. That's not like a kind of bread and butter feature. You know, you could look at Shimano, for example, and like think that, you know, maybe Shimano should have done exactly that. Shimano probably should have brought SRM. You know, they've had a few teething problems with their power meters over the past decade, for example. As Warren said, like, you know, maybe this is a kind of, you know, SRAM making another smart decision to, you know, buy Hammerhead and get this kind of smart integration rather than just kind of, you know, trying to like tack it on to someone else's product.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, SRAM definitely have a history of this. I wonder who's next on the list. Anyway, last point, I'm just going to say this one because I think it's I feel smug about it, but no, I don't. In a previous podcast, we speculated that the things we will and won't see from SRAM Red, and I speculated that rim brakes would be gone. No surprise, there is no rim brake option for this. Like, when did Red come out originally? 2019?
Red Axis was 2019.
2019.
Yeah.
And at that time, it did come with a rim brake option. Hooray. Everyone loves rim brakes. No surprise, 2024 is gone. However, with the backwards compatibility, with 12-speed stuff, those who are still riding rim squidgers can, of course, use the old shifters and rim brakes with the new group set. Other than the change in ergonomics function, it's going to be absolutely the same. I'm sure the people will be very happy. I'm not surprised that they've maintained that backwards compatibility. It'd be a shocking
Do you think young Jack Evans will be saving his pennies to rush straight out to upgrade his Ultimate Canyon Ultimate CFSLX?
He's made big noises about a hill climb season again and going fast. So quite possibly, if he's chasing those gains, but he should probably just get a mechanical group set if he wants to build a lightweight bike. Simon, you've just shared some very hastily put together notes, very wisely, because I didn't think to add this to the podcast, about the price of the group set. So go on, hit me. What are we going to be set back for this top tier group set?
So SRAM has told us that we're looking at a base price, in inverted commas, of £3,000, €3,350 or $3,000. But that doesn't include a crank set or a cassette, which rather weirdly. So having those in brings the total cost to just over £4,000, basically, or kind of, you know, $4,000.
Weirdly, the pricing is in parity with with US dollars and pounds is in parity. That's quite unusual, actually, for a big brand like SRAM. Anyway, carry on.
And I think you know, like it's always really tricky talking about prices because we have to caveat everything, you know, with real world prices may vary. You know, Jura Ace, when we reviewed it, was costed up to us by the UK distributor at just over £3,500. So slightly cheaper. But then, of course, like I said, you know, real world Shimano prices, you know, you could probably get a Dura-Ace group set for like $2,000.
Oh, yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Or so, cheaper if you asked a couple months ago when the rock bottom prices, but yeah.
Yeah. But then Campagnolo's super record is, you know, £4,500. So, you know, prices have been going up across the industry and then, you know, fluctuating massively in recent years. I don't know if this is what you would actually pay at a shop. And obviously, you know, OEM pricing, the pricing you'll pay to get it on a bike will be different. And I think, as, you know, kind of Warren's commented in some of his coverage, that because of the backwards compatibility, you know, if you've already got an existing bike with SRAM access on it, there's no need to rush out and buy a complete new group set, is there?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, as much as New Red impresses me, I don't have a Red Axis bike at home.
Mm-hmm. As in previous generation Red Axis. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've got a Force bike. I've got a Rival bike. Now, both of those, when it comes to, you know, replace, repair, I'll probably look to just, you know, switch into the Red. You know, front mech, rear mech, you know, the shifters is probably one of the most expensive parts of the group. But I actually think the ergonomic gains, and especially the braking gains, are worth it. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, as long as you're happy with just mixing and matching, which I think is absolutely fine, if that's the way I go. I wouldn't be looking to buy the complete group. I mean, those complete group set prices as well, it has to come with the caveat that you do get that hammerhead. That's a £450 GPS is in the bundle.
Mm. I wonder if will they do an option without the computer?
I guess
computer.
You just buy the parts. Don't yeah, don't buy the group set package.
For the previous, I just had a little look online now, just out of curiosity. It's quite hard to find a full 2x Red group set for sale, as in previous generation one, but RRP that's been quoted on this website I'm looking at, which looks reputable, is about £2,400, so a significant jump versus the previous generation. Or you can get an old one for £1,800 now. You buy an old Red, pretty decent group set still. But, you know, it's a significant jump up versus the old one. As ever, though, like, this is a top-tier group set. The price will come down. The people who are listening to this are like, I want that new group set. Doesn't matter if it's £4,000 or £5,000, they're going to buy it anyway.
I also think, like, people are just buying less and less group sets now, even with Shimano group sets. You know, there are only a few sellers that actually sell Shimano group sets. You know, in the UK, we have places like Merlin Cycles, for example, is like one of the big ones. But, you know, before the demise of Wiggle, for example, which was arguably the biggest online bike shop in the UK, you know, they didn't sell complete group sets. So obviously the pricing is indicative of relative value. But one of my race bike of the year bikes this year was the Specialized Tarmac SL8 Pro. You know, you could get it with either SRAM Force Axis with the kind of integrated power meter spider, or Shimano Altegra DI2 with a left-sided power meter only. They're exactly the same price, both £8,000. So, you know, if this is, you know, as Warren says, £500 more expensive than Jura Ace in inverted commas, I don't think you're going to see a top of the range Tarmac SL8 with SRAM Red end up being £500 more expensive just because it's got the new group set. I wouldn't have thought.
Interesting. Yes, complete bikes. I don't know what's going to be coming out. We'll have a little nose. We might even write an article about latest bikes available with SRAM Red. That's always quite a popular one on site because people like looking at shiny, new, expensive bikes. But yes, long story short, this is going to be on expensive bikes. It's very expensive to start, but it will get cheaper eventually. And if you're listening to this and you really want it, you probably don't care what it costs anyway. As ever, we've mentioned it several times now, there's loads of content around this on the site. We have a real weights feature comparing this to Dura-Ace DI2. We have, of course, the news story. We have a review from Warren and plenty else besides on the Wahoo computer and some other bits from Zip and...
Tires.
That's
Goodyear?
The one.
Yeah, Zip have partnered with Goodyear on a new tire, which is obviously been a reaction to... Hookless humbug, kind of.
Hookless humbug, very good.
But they kind of turned it around that quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something they've obviously been working on a while. They wanted a tyre that was absolutely optimised to their rim width. So it's a new Goodyear Zip tyre. It will be available from SRAM, but it will also be available from Goodyear, even though it's branded as...
Interesting. That's quite unusual, because Zip has done its own tyres in the past.
Yeah.
So they must be just kind of deciding, maybe they'll acquire Goodyear, maybe that'll be the next one for them. But
yeah, so they've got the Vector R Z30 NSW, which was designed to go with their NSW wheel sets, particularly the 353. And then there's the Vector R Z30 SW, which is designed to go with the 303 Firecrest. And what they were talking about is, like, the bead on this tire has a certain angle that when it's inflated, it creates an absolutely perfect seal with the vertical sides of the inner of a hookless rim.
You'd hope tires previously were doing that, but anyway, carry on.
But I think it's a tire that could work both tubeless and clincher. The bead could be slightly less precise.
I think, you know, this is one of my favourite topics. the issue has always been that the wheel manufacturers don't make the tyres.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we've seen brands like Giant, for example, has decided to make its own tyres specifically in order to solve the kind of hookless woes issue. And that's why Giant and Kadex's tyres are rated for like up to 125 PSI. Because they've made them themselves, done all the testing, done all the designing. You know, they're so confident that they have said, you know, our tyres don't have to stick to the 72.5 PSI ETRTO limit. We can go up to 125 because we know, you know. Whereas, like, for every other brand, you know, I'm sure they get in a Conti GP 5000, a Shelby Pro 1, all the big tyres. But then, like, you know, the tyre manufacturers are always changing their designs. You know, they're not working in unison. They're all working to the same standards. But actually, like, you know, all working to the same standards can mean a lot of things because, you know, the ETRTO tubeless tyre is designed around the 19 millimetre rim width. But that's actually already well out of date for what wheel manufacturers are doing.
Particularly,
but that's a whole other podcast,
yeah,
isn't it,
Jack? Yeah, yeah. Let's leave it right there. I'm going to put a hard stop. No more wheel chat from Simon. If you have any questions about the new group set, please send those through to podcast@bikeradar.com. We love answering your questions. And if there's any other talking points you'd like us to cover in a future podcast, let us know there. You know, there's lots and lots to cover here and doubtless more to come from SRAM. And again, if you have done any interesting hacks with your electronic group set setups, please do send those through. We love that kind of stuff and we love writing about it. In the meantime, thank you very much, Simon and Warren. I look forward to seeing the reaction to the group set and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.